On this episode of Movies Ruin My Life, a quick talk on It and our plans for the rest of 2017 into 2018 on the podcast. Ready?
Let's do this.
So that's Nick.
Yep.
I'm Brandon. And just a quick talk on It. Good sir.
Yep.
Let's just get right into this. So spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the film, which seems like everybody saw the fucking film.
Yeah, I went opening weekend. So the only thing I said throughout this whole movie every time like the fucking clown come up was just that fucking clown. It does scare you. Like it's got some good scares in it.
Yeah.
Really well done. I mean, yeah, really well done. Well casted, too. I like the cast.
Yeah.
It's funny, too, because they were saying this summer was, like, terrible for box office. And, like, the minute summer ended, it drops, and it was massive.
Well, you also got to think about the fact that horror fans have been desperate for a long time for something great to happen.
How many
I know
years?
That I have.
How many years now? They said, what, 27 years since the last film?
Yeah, since the last film, which is funny because in the book, he comes back every 27 years.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
Honestly, this movie scared the shit out of me at times. Like, I mean, there's something really creepy when it comes to children in horror films.
Yeah.
Especially when they're being hunted by a creature.
Mm-hmm.
Especially that opening shot. I did not expect the opening the way it was with Georgie in the sewer. Like, I got the whole, okay, here's Pennywise in the sewer. And trying to lure Georgie in. I didn't expect what happened next, which was him getting his arm bitten off.
Yeah.
Like, I had no clue that
was
fucking...
Pull him in. Yeah.
I thought he was going to pull him in, kind of like what Tim Curry did.
Mm-hmm.
And no, he bit his arm off, which was very graphic.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I thought the child actor's reaction to being his arm pulled off, like, I think a kid would be screaming like...
He was.
Like, not as hard. Not like this kid wasn't like thrashing around like he lost his arm. Like as soon as like he kind of settled, it looked like he settled down.
Well, he fell to his face and was screaming and was crawling, trying to crawl away.
Yeah, but I mean.
One thing I thought that they nailed in that opening sequence, because I wasn't 100%, I'll be honest with you, yet on the CG, the big opening teeth, etc. I wasn't 100% sold on it. I liked it, but I was kind of being cautious. I was all around very cautiously optimistic about this flick.
Yeah.
At that moment, I still wasn't sold on that. What I was sold on was the same thing that scared me about the book, the same thing that scared me about the miniseries.
What did it premiere on, ABC back in the early 90s?
I think it was an ABC, yeah.
A horror miniseries on ABC. Go figure that one out.
Well.
But then again, back then.
Stephen King would have signed anything in those days.
That's true.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug. Anywho.
Anyways, yeah, the CG...
Hey, I'm not knocking Stephen King. I love the guy.
Nah, you can't knock him.
You know.
You gotta admit, he writes children in his stories pretty damn, like, well-rounded.
Well, a lot of his best children are from the era that his children were that age, you know? And I don't think that... He said straight out that none of his children are the basis for any of the characters, but certainly... Watching them interact in this,
but he understands the characteristics of a child, especially around those ages, like what they'll do, especially like in this era too. Like you see like the way these kids interact with each other, like they shit talk each other. And I said it to you off air. It's like when you're a kid, you don't know how to swear properly, so you just start bringing up like curse words.
Every
5 seconds, it's like you chain off three fucks in a second, and it's like that's what these kids were doing. They were just chaining off fuck you, fuck this, fuck that.
Mm-hmm.
Not really forming sentences.
And seeing a kid swear is always funny.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
In any case, what scared me when I was a kid, because I think I told the story on our Stephen King episode when the Faculty of Horror was on. I read this book way too young. I tried to read it at age 10. I checked with my mom yesterday. I'm like, what grade was I in? She said you were in grade 5. So I was about 10 years old. I tried to read it for a school assignment, and I ended up having to kind of just base my assignment on maybe the first 600 pages of the book,
yeah,
something like that, because I didn't finish it. I did finish it eventually, but the thing that scared me about the book, because I keep going there and I don't say it, so the thing that scared me about the book and the first TV miniseries and this film was everyone's complacency, the adults. You know, just this, as if nothing is going on.
Yeah. They're numb to it all. It's like...
Well, one thing I liked that they upped the ante in this series a little bit was that it seemed as though some of the parents did know. Like, I got the distinct impression that Eddie's mom knew. And that was her keeping him inside. Like, I just got this vibe from the character, the way she was... It was a little bit of a different play on it, but I liked it. I liked that it seemed as though she was cognizant of what was going on and she was trying to keep him safe. Maybe she didn't know, like, oh, it was a fucking, essentially, like, being that's older than the universe, you know, trying to feed off the fear of our children.
I like how...
But, you know...
Yeah, but there's, like, a lore to it as well, especially, like, when Ben goes to the library, because he's got no friends in the start of the summer, he starts researching the town, and he stumbles across this.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how it's kind of like pushed under the rug. They sweep it under the rug. And
speaking of that shit, can we get into this a little bit?
Yeah.
As two white males, let's have a conversation about them devaluing the only African-American boy in the cast.
Yeah.
Mike is the fucking librarian when he grows up. Mm-hmm. Mike is the history buff in the book. Mm-hmm. He is the one who tells them this, you know, about all of this shit because of his.
Now
he's the only black kid that's being persecuted in a fucking all white town.
And now he's dead. And then he downgraded him in the film to the tough guy.
And he's trying to find his place in the world. And yeah, they've in this film. They've given all of the character depth to Ben to essentially make him more.
But I kinda, more I think I understand why though, because I saw this a few weeks ago when it first came out, like 2 weeks ago or a week ago when it came out. He's homeschooled. His parents died in an accident. He's homeschooled. I think.
But that's why it works.
Because
he can read whatever the fuck he wants. Mm-hmm. You don't need to sit in the library.
I think his like grandfather knows about the town and knows the history of the town with kids going missing and doesn't want him anywhere near that shit.
They wanted to endear you to chubby little cute Ben with his fucking New Kids CD or New Kids tape
That kid looked like a young, like a child Chris Farley to me.
So that you were just as fucking pissed when you know, Beverly kisses Bill at the end. Like that was what they were doing there. They wanted you to be upset because Ben's the sweet one. Ben's the one that fucking saves her. Ben's the, like, fucking Bill leaves her to go kill Pennywise.
Or, yeah.
You know, like, so they wanted everyone to kind of be upset. So that four chapter two, if it ends up being, the adult one, if they don't do something in between, you know, kind of make it like a Empire Strikes Back where the bad guy wins a round or something like that. If they just do an adult one at this point and they bring him back, then now it's like Ben comes back. He's had a chip on his shoulder his whole life. Now he's skinny. He's buff. He's a famous architect.
He's Channing Tatum at this point.
Exactly.
Probably.
You know what I mean?
And that's what a lot of people are asking for. They're like, as soon as this first movie dropped, every single media outlet has been pitching their dream cast of who they want for Chapter 2, and Channing Tatum comes up as Ben.
A lot.
Interesting. And the one that comes up for Beverly a lot is...
Chastain. Yeah.
Which I don't see it. I kind of don't want all these big names in a film.
No.
I really don't. It cheapens it. Like, I mean, half these child actors in this film are unknowns besides the kid from Stranger Things.
What's the kid's name from Stranger Things again? I can't think of it.
Finn Wolfhard.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, most of these kids are all unknowns except for him. And yeah, that's what I liked about it because they surprise you. I want a surprising cast. Fuck. Go through the catalog. You can find somebody.
Yeah, we're getting off topic here. I feel like we originally started off with the
original scare, the first scare.
Well, you started by saying in this exchange at least, that it was you know, Ben getting all this information that, like, you know,
yeah, he's the one gathering,
the rabbit hole kind of thing, which is great. And my point, of course, was just that's Mike, because Mike
becomes a librarian,
ends up growing up to be a librarian,
which he's probably going to grow up and own the fucking butcher shop in the next
city.
One.
First of all,
yeah, his
because
died
or the town. Well, yeah, and they treat him like shit.
They do.
You know, they're fucking racists, you know?
Well, no.
Which only, is also downgraded in this
only,
film.
Only the fucking sheriff's son's a racist at this point. The rest of the town doesn't really give a shit about, doesn't really... Well, I don't think they jump in because they know he's the sheriff's kid, right?
Well,
unless,
so they know he's got a free pass, but, like, Henry Bowers, his place in the book is that he's blamed for the crimes, you know.
Rightfully so, he's an asshole.
So it's interesting that they've chosen to kill him off in the first one.
I don't think they still blame him. We don't even know if he's killed off. We just see him fall down a freaking wall.
Yeah.
Then again, he hit everything and every fucking rock on the
way
down.
Yeah, that was awesome. I laughed my fucking
head off. It kind of reminded me of Homer Simpson falling down Springfield Gorge because he just keeps falling. One rock, two rock, three rock, and he's down. But yeah, I kind of liked. There's a lot of, like, all these kids have their own arcs,
except for Mike, who is arguably the most important.
What are
character.
You talking about? He's the one who shoots the bully down the damn well. He was one who pops him with that stupid gun down the well.
But, yeah, but what you're talking about is plot. You're not talking about character. There's a difference.
He gets it's a redeemer story, though. He, like, you beat your bully.
No, man,
that's like, that's a redeemer. I call that a redeemer. Like, this guy's been picking on
you. He was not the only one tormented by Henry.
Yeah, too.
Like, that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean,
they've downgraded Mike so much. He's a character that everybody who's read the book loves. So, that being said, you haven't read the book, right?
I read, like, first five pages and then I gave up on it.
Oh. Congratulations.
I was the same age as you, actually. I was in the fifth grade, and my teacher saw me bring the book in.
Yeah.
Because...
Made you read something else?
She's just like, I don't think you're a strong enough reader for it, right? Mm-hmm. And I really wasn't a strong enough reader at the time.
Never went back to it?
Never went back to it, but...
To be honest, in fear of hurting Stephen King's feelings, because I know that he's an avid listener of the show, obviously.
Yeah.
No. I wouldn't recommend it to you. Like, I know we've talked about, you read some other stuff in his catalog. I wouldn't recommend, just fucking read the Wikipedia article. It's it's honestly enough, because...
I watched the first movie, that's what I got out of it.
There is, well, the TV series has to pull it back a little bit too much. I felt like even at parts this film pulled it back, but they pulled it back for the right reasons. Like, one thing I like that they did in this is they made it a lot more implied that... All of the boys are attracted to Beverly.
Yeah,
the
swimming hole scene pretty much set that up.
Yeah, like, they didn't need to, like, actually explicitly make a bunch of children, you know, into like weird sexy stuff. Like, you don't have to do that. You can just make it real innocent. They're all wearing their you know, fucking ugly 1980s tidy whitey shit, and.
Sorry,
and I like the move up to the 80s, because we're in the middle of that whole fucking nostalgia porn circa 1980 jerk off to the 80s.
Because the original one was what, set in 1950s,
like, or
60s?
The 50s. Yeah, so.
And really, nobody gives a shit about the 50s anymore. Now
I give a shit about the 50s.
I like the 50s, don't get me wrong, but I mean, like, on film, it just
it
everybody
works really
wants
well.
Everybody loves the 80s. Like, this is like the thing now with horror. The 80s is like the horror.
Well,
like,
but the 80s was a legitimate great time for horror.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, so.
Look at all new, most horror, like. I wouldn't call it Stranger Things a horror, but it's set in the 80s.
Well, it's part of that whole trend of, like...
So it's a trend that's like, let's take advantage of this trend now while we have a chance, right?
Absolutely.
And that's what they did.
They did that 100% correct, where they had the kids, you know, kind of long... But then they also were able to do it where they created that little love triangle, which is nice because it plays back in later. You know, they did a lot of nods to the fans where they didn't... have him necessarily, they didn't have Bill necessarily, like, do the, like, hi-ho, Silver, away, but he called his bike Silver. It
actually,
says
I
it
think
on
he
it.
Said hi-ho, Silver
Did
at one time.
Okay,
he just said hi-ho, Silver, but just very subtly.
Yeah.
I did catch that.
You know, I thought, and here's something, I thought, in addition to obviously the phenomenal performance by Tim Curry in the handful of scenes that he's in the miniseries, and obviously one of the few things that makes it fun, I wish that he was in 100 times more of it, just every scene with him. In addition to that, I really liked Jonathan Brandis in that series.
Really?
Like, I really, really did. Like, I thought he was a great Bill. I thought he did a great job with the stutter. I thought he portrayed a really strong leader like that. Because Bill is very much your anchor in both film adaptations. So it's like, you know, you have a protagonist that you believe in. And so I always liked... You know, I didn't super like Mr. Ponytail. I can't think of the actor's name. Not that I super care either. What the fuck is the actor's name? Richard Thomas? Yeah. But great fucking ponytail. But
that was a great ponytail.
Olivia Hussey. Doing absolutely fucking nothing in that TV miniseries.
But what I do like about, like, you're talking about how Bill's character has the stutter and whatnot.
Yeah.
When you think
I like both kids equally. That was the one place I couldn't make it.
That's what
divide.
I mean. That's what I like about the character itself, is because it's like when you think of a hero, somebody who's going to lead the troops, think of a General Patton who has like this great speaking capability to like rally like everybody together for this cause. And then you have this kid who just can't get over his speech impediment, but finds a way to make it work and get everybody on board and to like overcome that.
And I love that. One of those moments in the film where they all kind of come together as a group is them realizing that he did not stutter before they go into the house the first time.
Yeah. And he was he led the charge on that. That was great.
One thing we were talking about the swim scene. Did you catch the arbitrary turtle line?
No.
Oh, a turtle.
No, I didn't catch that.
Again, another little beautiful nod, because in the book, basically, the turtle, the universe was created by a giant fucking turtle.
Okay.
Who is like on the side of good. Like, I can't explain it any better than that.
Okay.
And the turtle.
I'll just take your word for that.
Yeah. And like in the final showdown, the turtle comes to their aid essentially, to combat, the deadlights of it. And so forth. So
interesting.
So that's what that is an homage to.
I gotta say, they did hand. I loved like the scenery that they used was great. I love where the location shooting on it.
Yeah, looked great.
Hamilton, Ontario has never looked better.
Well, actually, you bring up a good point. Did it feel like Maine?
Little bit. The only time, but you do catch a lot of Canadiana in this film.
Mm.
Did you remember where they're by the train tracks and you see all the freight cars going around? Like there's a train, they're by a set of tracks and you see a bunch of freights.
It's
on
weird.
A train.
You're informing me this and I just acted like I knew it, which is stupid because I didn't. I didn't know this was filmed in Hamilton.
This is filmed in Hamilton.
Really?
And you can catch
it. I know Hamilton pretty well. You'd think I'd recognize it.
But the best part, how you can tell it's Canadiana, is you're looking at all the freight train, like all the steel containers.
CN?
Not CN. Canadian Tire. Is stamped on the side of a fucking steel container passing through the shot.
Oh, really?
And I start pissing myself laughing.
You're
on
this.
Canadian Tire. You grow up in Canada, you know what the Canadian Tire logo looks like.
Okay.
You know exactly
what it is. Well, yeah, because you stay away from it.
But they blurred.
You go into the store across the street.
But it's blurred, but I mean just like it's the Canadian Tire logo.
For sure?
For sure, for sure.
I haven't looked at filming locations, which I generally know when we come in here, so I'm going to take your word on it. Mm. This little coffee stir stick looks terribly like the Blair Witch emblem, doesn't it?
A little bit.
Yeah, it's creeping me out.
Just a bit. Yeah, you did that on purpose. But yeah, I like that.
Sorry, where were we? Oh, yeah, with the kids, they work so hard to make them all characters, and they work so hard to fit in all these beautiful Easter eggs. Like, you know, I can't go through all of them, but like, I'm pretty sure that Christine appears on a t-shirt, if I'm not mistaken. I think it.
Did you see what? Did you see fucking, the films playing on the movie theater?
Yeah, Nightmare 5.
Nightmare 5, and Lethal Weapon 2. But
would, you know...
There's Lethal Weapon 2, and I think...
Yeah. It would have been better if they had made it 4. You know what I mean? In my opinion.
Isn't Nightmare 4 your favorite? Or no, Nightmare 3 is yours.
3 is right up there with 1 for me.
But the best I liked, though, was...
Because it could have been a little nod. My point with the 4 thing is it just could have been a little nod. But I do like, you know, like, okay, so... I don't get the significance of Lethal Weapon, but I like the Nightmare thing because obviously you had Dream Warriors and you had Dream Child, and they've picked Dream Child,
mm-hmm.
Which is, I guess, more appropriate, like what year, so it's supposed to be in 89, obviously.
Yeah.
89, right, for Dream Child?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So... You know,
well, there's a lot of like hidden stuff. Like if you look, you'll see it. I mean, I even caught the original Pennywise.
Yeah, in the dollhouse,
in the doll room,
Yeah,
like that room scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, Finn Wolfhard, by the way, was
well rounded. Fucking, like, made me laugh.
You know, I don't dislike Seth Green to the extent that everyone else dislikes Seth Green.
Neither do I, or
like some people do, not everyone else. But also, I think it's because we're both Buffy fans.
He's Oz.
Yeah. So, that does help. But, and also, like, Harry Anderson, who, he did, like, a real slapstick thing
mm-hmm.
in the miniseries, right? And I never really found Richie funny in the book. He was fucking annoying.
Mm-hmm.
This Richie...
He's annoying.
Really fucking charming because he's annoying.
Yeah, he's funny and annoying.
Legitimately lovable.
This motherfucker's got hammered.
Yeah, like that scene, the crescendo.
I can't even say it without laughing.
Yeah, this motherfucker looks like he's leaking hamburger helper. Yeah, a great line.
And then he's just making the mom jokes. Holy shit.
But the great exchanges between all the kids, you know? Yeah. And that shows real camaraderie because it's how you talk with your friends.
Mm-hmm. You all talk shit about each other.
You know,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what age you're at. You'll be talking shit about each other for the rest of your lives because that's what a friendship is.
Exactly.
And talking shit and getting away with it.
Yeah. But then if someone else does, you're all.
Yeah. Then it's just like, wait, what'd you say?
In any case, I, you know,
what was your favorite scare?
Sorry, I wanted to just jump to the end with him if I could for a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
With the Richie character, I love in the final sequence when Pennywise has Bill and is like, I can just take him. You guys can all fucking walk. And
they give him the doors? The three doors? Is that the way?
No. Right at the end when Pennywise is literally holding Bill around the neck. I like that's not my Stephen King Coke nose. That's allergies. Hay fever season.
Mm-hmm.
Or hay whatever season.
Yeah, there's not a big pile. There's not a big mountain of snow on this table
right now.
Yes, it's
pollen. No cocaine.
Nothing.
In any case, sorry, Steve.
Sorry.
But that moment when he's like, you know, first you this and then you that, and I can't remember the exact sequence, and now I gotta kill this motherfucking clown, is like one of the best moments in the film.
Yeah, because you don't know what he's gonna do.
Like, you know that it's going there. You know it's going there. Actually, no, I didn't.
I thought, I'm like, this motherfucker's gonna walk away. I'm like, wow, if he walks away, he'll be the biggest asshole on the planet. And then he's like, now I gotta kill this motherfucking clown.
It's a great moment. It's a really great moment.
But it's 1989. I'm like, fuck, only 2 years from now.
And I love that it's like that's him coming over his fear completely, you know.
Who says motherfucker better, this kid or Samuel L. Jackson? Because he's getting on par with him with the motherfuckers.
Yeah, he's pretty good. He's no Samuel L. Jackson, but
I'd like to see them
good.
Both in a film.
I don't even want to go there.
That'd be amazing. Motherfucker, motherfucker.
Motherfucker the movie?
Motherfucker the movie. You can't even write you can't even put that as a poster. It just has to be MF the movie.
Yeah, but it couldn't be a horror. Like, Samuel Jackson has not had the best of luck with horror flicks, you know?
Yeah, but you could make it a creature feature. He's done pretty good creature features.
Yeah, I guess.
Deep Blue Sea was my favorite. One of my favorites with him.
Yeah. I guess there's elements of Jurassic Park that are horror. It's interesting because he didn't even get to go to the fucking island. I was watching some, you know,
just in a soundstage
web video with him. Yeah, that he never got to go there and shoot the scenes that where he like loses his arm.
Yeah, it was like, a fake arm, obviously. Yeah,
so they're just like, we're going to take the arm.
We'll and we're off topic again. But anyways, continue your thought.
I just really like that scene. I think that moment, to be honest, I really enjoy the humor throughout.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed the scares, which I know you want to get into, and we'll get into in a second. And I thought for the most part, the film stayed pretty tasteful. And even when it got a little overboard, like I actually really liked the dancing moment.
The dancing clown, yeah.
Because he was completely out of his mind.
That's a lot of turmoil. There's a lot of turmoil with that scene. A lot of people are like creating memes based on it. And I'm like, why? That's perfect. Because this chick, he's throwing... You know how East likes to say that Freddy likes to play with his food?
Yeah.
Same with Pennywise. Pennywise likes to throw off everybody. Well, he needs the fear,
because that's what he's actually feeding
off of. So he's throwing them off, and they don't know what the fuck's going on.
Yeah.
And he throws everybody off, and then he just flips a switch, and like a snap of a finger, he'll flip on you. Yeah,
like if you're an omnipotent shapeshifter that feeds on fear, then you got to add some misdirection in there.
Exactly. And that dancing clown, that was pretty fucking creepy, because his head stayed like still.
Well, that exactly. My whole thing was that this interpretation of Pennywise, he never exactly does anything right. Like, there is moments in, say, for example, the miniseries with Tim Curry, where Tim Curry plays it completely kind of cute and then flips it, and it's fucking, like, heart-stopping.
Do you have Prince Albert in a can?
Yeah.
You do. You better let the poor guy out. And then just blood balloons everywhere.
Dude, that are you talking about that library scene with Richie? Oh, I love that. And he has
he's just over the rail with one foot.
Screaming at him. I love
and
it.
And everybody's just walking around, and then the blood packs just start popping. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Tim Curry, like, I love how this isn't a total ripoff of Tim Curry at all. It's its own thing. That's the way it should be.
And I like how they did it. This interpretation, he never exactly does it right. So as much as he's like, he's a clown and he's trying to lure them in, he doesn't exactly do you want a balloon, but he can't keep that smiling face. You know, that lip, the thing that Bill Skarsgård does, mm-hmm. where he kind of pushes his bottom lip down, mm-hmm. and that's how he's making the smile. Like these sorts of things.
Popcorn.
And pop, pop. You know, but even as he's laughing, he's staring at the kid like he's food.
It's like he's got two different emotions on his face. He's got a smile on the bottom, but he's got like this dead serious stare, like, I'm going to fucking eat you.
Exactly. And so when you see him dancing ridiculously, it's even better, because it's like Pennywise, the dancing clown, and he's just staring dead-eyed at you, but he's doing the fucking dance. He's
doing a fucking, what is that, Charleston?
You know what I mean? No. It's just, is that a real fucking dance?
I don't know. It could be a Charleston.
Kicks fucking sideways. That's all he does.
I don't know.
In any case, I really, really like that. I thought that was really good.
I love the way how he just mentally like assassinated all these kids, like just feeded off all of them.
Yeah,
like single-handedly, he knew one was afraid of fire. He knew one was afraid of the portrait in his father's rabbinical office.
Yeah,
the leper one.
Yeah.
That was like...
He's afraid of disease.
He's afraid of disease. So at first I thought, I'm like, that's a zombie. And then all of a sudden they said leper. I'm like, that's what that was? Holy shit.
Mm.
And then, of course, Ben inside the in the library being chased by the soldier, the kid soldier with the headlessness.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, that to me was the scariest of all of them.
The kid that died in the explosion. Yeah. That's in the book too. They find his head like fucking 2 weeks later or something.
The kid who died in the explosion by being chased through the stacks of a library. That scares the shit out of me.
Yeah.
You ever been in a library like that and just walking through stacks upon stacks?
Ghostbusters library? No.
Something like that. The one at York University has. There's a library at York University in the main building.
Maybe I just don't relate libraries to being like that.
But there's older libraries like that, and you can get lost in them, and it's some scary shit because you'll turn the corner and somebody will turn the corner at the same time, and you'll just jump and scare.
All right. You know what? Sorry. That was the end of my point, though.
Yeah.
But the thing that I didn't completely buy... was the reason that they were all staying together, which like the loser club was just like, well, you know, Henry Bowers is chasing all of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like we're actually fucking friends. Like four of them are friends. Everyone else is just like, well, they don't like you either. So
I think they changed the whole fact of the losers club. They kind of based it on the fact that,
but
Bill lost his brother and they the search for him and he's obsessed with this. His family doesn't believe in this.
But because of the that last act, I retroactively kind of liked all of that. So they didn't, it's interesting how they did it, because they didn't have to do the work off the jump, because they did it on the tail end of the film. Mm-hmm. It's, you know,
majority of the work was already done. They just had, each one of them had a piece of the puzzle. It's just,
and what you were saying about the parents too is totally true, by the way. Mm. Just like, and that's what's fucking terrifying. When your parents, like, imagine, like, you go missing and your parents are just like, yeah, whatever. Like, other sibling just fucking,
I actually have gone missing once.
Yeah, I believe it.
And then the cops showed up.
But you know what I mean? Like, the idea that your parents aren't going to come looking for you, or, like, an old lady that's on the porch and sees you, just like, oh, I better get in the fucking house before this kid goes missing.
Which was the most fucked up was that the fact that they just keep putting missing poster on top of missing poster on top of missing poster. It's
exactly.
Like, okay, this kid's definitely not coming back. It's been about 4 months. Let's throw another missing poster because this asshole went missing.
Yeah. And it's all linked to essentially the imagination and the town. So kids are really susceptible to it. And then the town is the center point of it. So it's really good, strong lore. As I said earlier, I don't love this book.
Mm-hmm.
It holds a special place in my heart because of the kind of turmoil I went through to read it, you know, and also having to lie my way through book reports. But yeah, where the fuck are we going with that? I don't know.
I don't know. Break?
Who cares? Yeah, let's take a break, come back, and we'll get into favorite characters, favorite scenes. You want to do favorite scares, so favorite we'll do scares. That. And then we'll wrap it up.
Sounds cool? Good to me.
All right. All right, so we're back.
Oh, we don't say we're back.
I say we're back.
Now it's a new trend.
No. I always say we're back. I don't say we'll be right back.
We should say we'll be right back.
No, because there's no time that passes for people listening. Like, it's been 40 minutes for us. Like, we're going to take a break, and then we go fucking stand on the balcony for 45 minutes and rant about nerd shit. Mm. But,
yeah, nerd shit. The consistency, the color, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's a scientific process.
Okay. all right, let's do this. Let's wrap this up quick.
Yeah.
Because I do want to mention a few things about Mermel coming 2018, essentially.
Yep.
Because we are doing some format changes to the show right now. So I do want to talk about that a little bit before we wrap up today.
Okay.
But that's not going to affect our Halloween schedule. Like, our October, we're it's going to stay the same as we've kind of been hinting at all year long, because we're... Everyone here has their kind of horror kink, you know, and they're all very different. So we've always got to appease everybody. Mm-hmm. So we've got lots of different stuff coming this year. Last year, you guys all were really cool about going in on Slasher Fest with me.
That was awesome fun.
I had so much fun. So this year, I'm being nice and taking suggestions from everyone else. But moving forward, after we get through this calendar year, we will have some changes. I do want to talk about them at the end of the show, but we're doing it kind of right now. I don't want to talk about it now, because if people want to just ignore me and just be like, fuck you, I'm going to listen to it, we'll deal with it then they can just skip the end of the episode, you know.
If you're using an iPhone, really just push the 15 plus seconds forward 100 times until you get to what you want to listen to.
Thank you.
What a helpful tip. You got to teach people.
Okay. It's a 10-second skip on Android.
Really?
Yeah.
It's 15 seconds. No, it's 30 seconds skip, which is awesome.
In Google Play. It's 30 seconds skip in Google Play, and it's 10 seconds back.
That's awesome.
On, like, Stitcher, I can't remember. Anyway. getting into the fucking movie. Let's do this all at once.
Okay.
Favorite character, favorite scene, favorite scare. This is what we're doing?
Sounds good.
Cool. You want to kick us off? Or you want me to go?
I'll go favorite character.
Okay.
I really, really did enjoy Beverly's character.
Okay.
Yeah, I loved Beverly Marsh as a character.
Sophia Lillis.
Yes. When you first meet her, this girl who's talked about, like, she's pretty much spoken badly upon her peers in the town. Because of all
the slut, call the slut, tramp.
Pretty much everything teen girls do to each other even to this day. This doesn't necessarily mean it's 1989, but then again, I'm a boy, so I can't really testify to this, but I'm pretty sure this is even done even today.
Yeah, and it's interesting the connotation difference between, say, for example, a girl who does that and a guy who does that. And that in itself is interesting commentary. So it does make the character,
but it's all but it is more it is a true it is a true statement. Like that is,
well, it's done. Not a true statement. It's
no, I mean saying like what I mean what I was saying beforehand. It's like it's girls are catty. That's they are very catty towards each other. It's
okay.
They tear each other to shreds, and I'm gonna say this because I do clean high schools for a living. I've had to go into girls' rooms, and the shit that is written on the walls is fucking ridiculous. Yep. If a parent were to ever walk into one of those washrooms in a high school and read what is written on the walls, they'd probably have a heart attack and start suing.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad.
Just want to put in a quick disclaimer before we move along with regards to the girls are catty comments. The opinions expressed in this episode do not necessarily reflect those of Mermel or its affiliates. Thank you.
Really? We're going to put the disclaimer up for that comment? We've said worse shit than that before.
Well, I already put one up for the Alan Moore episode.
Sorry, hold on. We do have a female sitting in the room presently, and I will ask this question now.
No, let's move on with the show. We got to go quickly here.
Okay. So I like Beverly, how she overcomes, like, she just does, she ignores everybody. When you first meet her, she's sitting in a washroom stall, and the girls are pretty much like teasing her,
and she already knows what's coming too.
She knows what's coming because she
puts her bag up.
She's ahead of the curve. Like I honestly believe she's ahead of the curve. She puts the bag up, she protects herself, but she kind of freezes. She just doesn't give a shit about what anybody says. She knows who she is.
Yeah.
And they don't know the kind of background that she comes from, and you as the viewer don't get the background of her until you go to her house and meet her father, and you get that subtle, it's, I don't want to call it a subtle hint, but you definitely know that there is something implied that her father is definitely molesting her. And like her safe space is the washroom.
And to, for Pennywise to violate that.
Violate that with blood, and for Bill to pick up on that is just,
yeah, I've always liked that.
I had that appreciation of Bill where he picks up, like, he sees how distraught, like, her safe space has been violated. And he's like, we can't leave it like this. And he gets all the boys to clean it up.
Well, I think inherently the thing that's so fantastic about Bill, and he's not my favorite either, but what I like about the writing, the construction of the character, particularly for this film, but for this, as well as, you know, Jonathan Brandis' turn, as well as in the book, is that his compassion, his empathy is what drives him and what propels him into a leadership role. So, you know, when you say, for example, you talk about the idea of like a great boss at your work, or, you know, a great captain on a sports team that you play on, or any of these things, generally it's not always, you know, the person with the biggest mouth or the biggest shoulders have you.
A usually, lot of times when it comes
that you will fight for, and you know, 100%
usually it's the
will
one who just falls into the role. It's like you just said, like with captains and with great leaders, it's not the one that's picked out of the crowd as, oh, this guy looks like he can be. It's the one who just
takes
acts.
It. He just takes charge. The role regardless,
and doesn't even think about it. He just knows what he has to do and goes through with it, and that's what Bill is. But when it comes to Beverly's character, she's always pushing forward. She's not letting anything hinder her or stop her or get in her way. Like, even in high school, that was me. Like, I never really – I knew the jocks. I talked to the jocks and, like, whatever. I just didn't give a shit about them, but I always – gravitated to more to the people who are like on the outside of everything, who just talk, like to talk about comics or just talk shit in general, like that's what I call I guess like outcasts, like are drawn to each other. So like she knows these guys aren't really the most popular. They're losers,
but they're like-minded,
but they all have exactly. So she gravitated towards them and helped them out, and it was good.
And it's interesting how she also kind of plays a little bit of a maternal role,
a little bit.
And I like that very much. I really do. I think
she has that mentality to always push forward, and that's why I kind of pick her as my favorite, because like she doesn't take shit from anybody, even that fucking clown.
I'm scared of you.
I'm not scared of you.
That's and then you, and then you get the one viewing of the deadlights that you get in the movie, by the way, is that moment, which is cool.
But even still, like,
and they don't have to say it. They don't
when
to
they're
drop
doing
the,
when they're doing the research in Bill's garage with the what the fuck is that rotary thing called?
Yeah.
Right,
the old photo projector.
I don't even know what the fuck it's called, but
slide
projector. Got it.
Wow.
Well, we're
yay for technology.
Yay.
That's not a computer.
When Pennywise starts coming out of the picture, say that five times fast. He grows big and
Pennywise protrudes from the picture.
Yeah, exactly. He grows this.
He should have said that to work on a stutter.
So, anyways, he grows this enormous size, and it's just this giant clown's head. And Beverly puts herself up against the wall, and he goes right at her, but. She might look scared, but her eyes aren't closed.
Mm-hmm.
She's looking him dead in the eyes. So she kind of has like this. She's got. I can't say it. Damn
you
it.
You want to say balls,
don't yes,
you?
I really do. She does have.
Girls can have
well,
balls.
She does. She's got more balls than half the Losers Club because she's not afraid to stick up for anything.
Yeah.
She'll stick up
you
for.
You mean it in a. You know.
Hypothetical.
Yeah. You don't mean that she's literally got testicles between her legs, which, again. Possible with modern plastic surgery. And
yes, but anyways, but yes. So she's my favorite because she's a tough girl.
Okay, favorite scene, favorite scare.
Favorite scene. Fuck, it's a toss up between Georgie getting his arm bitten off at the beginning of the film.
Yeah,
but the one gut wrenching scene to me was seeing Georgie in the sewer and talking to Bill.
Bill having to fucking blow his brains out.
Like I remember, I was sitting next to my brother. My girlfriend's on one side and. She's giggling up a fucking storm because she thinks like this kind of stuff's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my brother are just like, oh no. Like my older brother just going, oh no. And then I asked him after, I'm like, why'd you go oh no for it? It's like, because man, when you see a kid with one arm,
yeah,
especially like that's heart wrenching.
And also it's a little bit of a play on the situation because you think you entertain because you see all the children floating,
but you don't see Georgie
and you don't see Georgie. And then you see that he's missing the arm, which Bill doesn't know about.
Exactly. So it.
So you think for a second, you kind of entertain, like, what if this is him? And even when he doesn't come back, they, you know, it's totally intentional, but it's tasteful.
Yeah.
You think, like, oh, fuck, did he just blow his brother's brain out with a fucking
gun? Yeah, but I mean, that was just a gut-wrenching scene, and I'll call
air
that
gun.
One. I will call that my favorite because it's like, you really are a fucking asshole, Pennywise, for doing that to somebody. Especially at the... Like, these kids are what? Like, 14, 15?
But that's
15?
What he feeds on. It's like...
Well, I know, but they're 14, 15 years old, and that's something
I'm
like,
sure cows probably say the same thing about us.
That's something that will scar somebody for the rest of their life, seeing, like, your dead brother with one arm crying and saying, I want to go home. I want to be a family. It's a heart-wrenching fucking scene.
There's just some fucking cow on a farm somewhere being like, you're a fucking asshole, Ronald McDonald.
Every hamburger joint in town.
Sorry.
But anyways, so yeah.
Where
that,
are we? Favorite
So that was my favorite scene. My favorite scare?
Yeah.
It's got to be Ben in the library.
Ben in the library?
And I said this to you off air, and I'm probably going to get a lot of shit for this, but whatever, fuck it. I have this thing with horror films, and there's two things in horror films that the two characters I feel sorry for, the two character types, are the fat kid and the guy in the wheelchair.
Okay.
And now, the guy in the wheelchair is less and less, like, hasn't been done in a very long fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
But the fat kid always gets done, and you always feel sorry because, especially when they're being chased, if you root for them because you just say, all you're saying in the back of your mind is, don't fall, because when you fall, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're that size. I used to be a fat kid, and when I fell, I was down for the fucking count. I wasn't getting back up. I just like, even in like nightmares when I'd run, my chubby self, I'd just have it in my mind, just don't fall. And if I fell,
you're fucked.
I was fucked.
You'd wake up screaming. Right? Yeah.
I'd have my throat slit in the dream, and I would wake up gasping.
Oh, okay.
But then night terrors, very very real. But yeah, so that scene alone, like, even just watching, that was the first jump scare that hit me and my brother the hardest while watching it, because we both flipped shit, because he did fall at one point and then turned around and Pennywise was right there, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, oh fuck, it's going to be one of those films. But yeah, that was definitely my favorite scare. Next and second, I'd say close second would be Georgie getting his arm bitten off.
Okay. pardon me. For me, favorite character, I can't go with any part of that love triangle.
So you're not going Bill, Beverly, or Ben?
Or Ben.
The three B's?
Three B's. Better Business Bureau. Mm-hmm. Big Ben. I can't go with them because I felt as though you were supposed to feel that way about the characters. So my problem is that's on the page, mm-hmm. right? So you know what? Like I'm going to go with Finn Wolfhard. Like
you're
I'm
Rich, gonna, yeah, Richie's
gonna
a go good with, choice.
I'm going to really go with Richie. One because the whole fucking movie, like I kind of liked the Stan character. I did, but you know, I thought they telegraphed a little too hard the fact that, like, as an adult, he, you know, if someone hasn't read the book or hasn't seen the second movie, you might just want to do the 10-second skip right now. He kills himself.
Yeah.
Before the, you know. So, the whole time I was just thinking about that. But, yeah, so I'm going to go with Richie because I've never liked Richie. I didn't like him in the book, which admittedly, you know, was several passes. So, maybe the humor, the 1950s humor didn't.
You don't
hit
get
with
much
me as a kid, and then the adult humor didn't hit with me as an adult, or rather as a, you know, finishing the book around probably 13,
mm-hmm.
Actually reading it all the way through properly.
There's not much backstory with Richie in this film, too. You don't really get a lot of backstory. He's the only character without a backstory in this film. We understand Beverly's home life. We understand Ben's life. We understand Bill.
You don't need a backstory for Richie.
Yeah, but we don't understand what Pennywise is feeding on his fears other than it's just a fucking clown chasing him.
Well, but he also fears for example, that the it's a great scene when he sees the missing poster of mm-hmm. himself. Why I think you don't need a backstory for Richie is because Richie's the only character. He's the truth teller of the group.
Mm-hmm.
He is doing the fucking sonnet throughout the film. This motherfucker looks like he's leaking hamburger helper. There's like some guy walking on stage and saying that in a play.
His exposition machine.
So, you know, he's not delivering exposition. He's not the one like Ben that's being like opening a fucking book and being like, you know, insert expository dialogue here. Clown, clown, scary, dead people, head in a tree.
Yeah, if anything, Richie kind of reminds me of Johnny Depp in First Nightmare.
He's the bridge to the audience, you know?
Oh, you call him that.
Because he is literally, he is confirming for you. Like, I feel this way. I'm in the audience. I'm scared shitless. And he's like, hey, man, I'm scared shitless too. You know, this kind of thing. So that kind of character doesn't always need a backstory. Also because they, like I said, they wanted to build that triangle out.
Mm-hmm.
And they sacrificed around it. And that's, you know, that's their choice. That's fine.
We'll see if it pays off in part two.
We'll see if it pays off. And because also, Beverly's not supposed to know. Doesn't she know that he wrote that now? Doesn't she know that Ben wrote that now?
She does, but I don't think she gives a shit.
Well, obviously not, because she totally just, like in the last scene, just sticks her tongue down fucking Bill's throat.
Well, yeah, well, maybe it'll help him not stutter.
Yeah.
Self-confidence.
Well, right? Like when they go away from the town, they forget all that shit
anyway.
Well,
that's the thing towards the end of the movie with that love trial. Ben holds on to staying in that last, to the last,
yeah,
like,
he's the last one
but
to
he's
go.
Just like, I can't do it.
But that's also, it echoes the significance of the characters throughout the, you know, the book, the order that they go away in. It echoes the significance of them in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me, with the exception of Mike, who's is considerably more important to me in the book, and the character that probably in a lot of ways I related to the most, because like he didn't really need to do any of this shit, but he did. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he never left, and he was just in this shit. Everyone else ran away, but in any case, yeah. So that's my favorite. Favorite character would be Richie because it's the only iteration, kid or adult, that I've seen so far or that I've read that I liked. Favorite scene, you know, I like the bonding moments. I do. So for example,
the swimming hole.
Yeah, the swimming hole was great. But I think my absolute favorite is when they finally link up, finally get the entire Losers Club together, and they see that. Mike's being fucking beaten down and you get that little shot of Pennywise in the fucking weeds waving a severed arm at him.
And then they're throwing the rocks.
And you have the rock fight.
Oh my god, that was great.
And fucking Richie Holler's rock fight, and he gets pelted in the head with a rock. And the whole thing plays like overt.
Have you ever been
score.
In a rock fight?
No, I don't want to be in a fucking rock fight. Why would I, why would that is the stupidest thing ever.
I used to throw rocks at my brother.
That doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me at all. So in any case, I'm going to go with that scene because I just it felt like it came a little too late in the film. Like I felt like I was waiting for it. So it was a kind of a geek out moment. Maybe it's a shit moment. It's probably cheap laughs because you're watching children get pelted with rocks and one by each other.
And Richie gets smoked on the top of the crown on that when everybody in my showing, and I don't care, it's probably every showing, but as soon as you see that rock crack the kid in the top of the head,
yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Everybody, audibly.
I love going to horror films. I'll rephrase that. I love going to good horror films.
Yes.
Live. There's something transcendental about that experience. When you go to a bad horror film, the audience turns on you very fast, and then it becomes, even if you enjoy the film, if the consensus among the group is that it's bad, then it's not enjoyable for you because you can feel the tension in the room. But conversely, when you go to a good screening, like we were getting claps, laughs, man, people were standing
up. I still had theater talkers in mind, though.
I didn't have any talkers in mind, and it was great. Everyone was very respectful.
My brother wanted to kick the guy in front of him in the head. I'm like, shit, done it. Fuck, man. I would have done it. I would have just kicked the back of his seat, told him to shut the fuck up. But that's just, you get that.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, with when it comes to like horror films, good horror films,
you probably should have just asked him to stop talking first. That would be step one. If he didn't do it, then it's like,
hold my purse. And then,
yeah, exactly.
Game on.
Yeah, then it's game on.
But I mean, I went to a screening of
my fanny pack.
Yeah, I went to the screening of The Witch. Have you ever heard of that movie?
No, I do a show called Movies Ruin My Life.
Okay, anyways, but The Witch, it's supposed to be, it's got like a 9 rating and like a 10 rating on like across the board. And I went to the screening.
Yeah, first half slow.
But no, it's just people were audibly laughing towards the end of this film because it became a joke. Like I guess the whole theater thought of like this movie was a joke. They weren't taking it seriously, especially when it came to the whole, the devil is a giant
goat.
Yeah. Right. So we just started laughing, and those creepy fucking twins. Oh man.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we just and then you can't help but audibly laugh. Like I can't help if somebody's laughing in my vicinity and they're laughing hard. I'm laughing.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite scare.
Favorite scare. This one is harder for me because, admittedly, they did a really good job. It was a tense film. I felt it.
A lot of jump scares.
Yeah, but not poorly done.
Not poorly done.
They were tasteful. And you know, we should give a shout out to the Muschietti siblings. Is that how we pronounce that?
Yeah, Andres Muschietti and Barbara Muschietti.
Barbara's a sister, yeah. You know, visually this film hits home, like, you know, so all the work that they've done there, it's fantastic. I don't know who the DP is on this, admittedly, but they did a great job balancing the daylight sequences and the darkness. They did a really good job. It was never like you were watching a different movie, which you do get in a lot of horror, especially modern horror, where everything is like crystal fucking clear.
Yeah.
You felt like you were where you were, and it didn't feel
fixed.
It didn't feel it felt organic.
Exactly.
Is a good way to put it. In any case.
But your favorite scare?
I don't like, I'm not super big into body horror shit. You know that. It has to be done really fucking well.
Yeah, you're not a gore porn kind of guy.
No, like it has to be really tasteful, and generally there has to be another layer of something there that usually has to be something intellectual or psychological there to drive me forward, to make it tense for me. I don't really give a shit about scary kids, you know, traditionally speaking. Like, it's not that it's like, ooh, that's spooky. Okay, great. I'm a huge slasher guy. You know this.
Yes.
And there was some great stalking moments in the film, but there wasn't, I don't know. It wasn't a film that necessarily appealed to me. So I want to say very clearly that I very strongly suggest this film because of that, because this isn't a film for me, and I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But that being said, I would probably go with in terms of the best like horror moment. It's not even really a scare. It's just when fucking Henry Bowers kills his fucking dad, you know,
with Pennywise on the TV.
Yeah.
That like Sesame Street-esque TV show.
Yeah. I loved it. And I love, you know, I love that how they're, you know, they're working through the TV, you know, he's talking to him through the TV. He sticks the knife up against his neck and then puts the blade out, pushes the blade out into his neck, and then he has to stab him repeatedly, I think,
Pennywise is like clapping, like
kill them all. So, you know, it's not the greatest of moments, but from the moment that you see the balloon hanging out of the mailbox all the way to that, and the character switch that goes on there, I really, really liked it. I also vaguely.
Well, you can tell.
I had a strong feeling about the backyard sequence with of that creepy house with, not Mike's, but with, shit. What's his name? Eddie.
Yeah.
Who was a character also that I really liked, because I hated fucking Eddie in the first one. Eddie pissed me off in the first miniseries, and I really liked Eddie in the book.
I like how they skipped the whole... wait till he's older to find out that he's like his mom was lying to him. Like I like how he just picks it up and like he makes his own decisions towards the end of the film. Like he grows into his own.
Yeah, they've moved a lot of the plot to the kids so that I think that they can make the second one not so bloated.
Mm-hmm.
Because the problem is that
I get a scene where it's Bill and Mike riding Silver around the back lot, I'm probably going to be not going
to
be happy.
Well, you kind of have to do something like that because they need to start from scratch. Because as much as you know these characters, you now have to endear yourself to the adult versions.
Yeah.
So if they don't have those like, reveals, like, oh, it was a placebo all along, then they don't have to worry about that. It's all taken care of here.
What's a placebo?
Yeah. What does he say at the end? That's a really good line. You know, I know what this is. It's a gazebo. And he smashes it to the ground. Brilliant. He
tells his mom off.
But yeah.
It's like, hey, can I get a kiss from your mom too?
No, he says it to her. Do you want one from me too? Mm-hmm. That's what he says.
And the mom just looks, oh,
this is Kasparak.
Oh, you boys.
Yeah. In any case, any final thoughts on it? Well, we're assuming that people saw this that are listening,
mm-hmm.
So but you don't really have to sell it. But
so
like,
go see it again, and if you
go
can,
see it again.
And if you see the train with the Canadian Tire logo on it,
yeah, then email me because
email
I
me a screenshot of
that
because
shit.
It was there.
Really enjoyed it. Haven't enjoyed a horror flick.
Haven't
in
enjoyed
theaters
a horror flick in theaters in a while.
This long,
actually.
In quite some time. This is good. So. I really recommend it, and if you haven't seen it and you listen to the show for some reason because you're glutton for punishment, thank you. Go out and see it. If you have, do you agree, I guess, would be the thing. Okay, quickly, final thought. What we're doing with Mermal in the new year, I know that you guys have noticed that we've pretty much every month for the last like a few months, we've gone down in terms of we've had like two episodes. We haven't had one weekly episode like we were pumping out. You know, this time a year ago, for example. Obviously, I've mentioned on the show before, we did a live podcast from Paul and I's baby shower. So that we're having a baby, we're prepping for that, obviously. Also, we're changing the format of Mermal come 2018. So we're putting a lot of work into what we want to do, what we want to keep, what we don't want to keep, what we want to change. We want to do more tournaments because we know that like we get a lot of comments about tournaments. We want to do more actor-focused stuff, and that might be how we do it because a lot of people email us and say like the biggest – honestly, the most requested episode that we've ever gotten is Kurt Russell.
Really?
Kurt Russell.
Tom Cruise because like you have an affinity for Tom Cruise.
Well, yeah, because I usually – you know.
You always bring him up.
Yeah. Well, he's a fucking target, so a moving target. Anyway,
When you do the Clooney one, you know I'm there.
Yeah. So we're gonna look at that. We're gonna try a few new formats, and we're gonna obviously do more battle royals because we like that format a lot.
Absolutely.
We haven't done one in quite a while.
October staying the same.
What started all this? Yeah, October staying the same. We're sticking to horror, sticking to scary movies and thrillers and stuff. Next week we've got Silence of the Lambs, which. We're about to record. Nick, you're going to stick around for the first segment?
Yes, I will stick around.
And then after that, we have I don't know, a whole bunch of shit this month. I think we got a John Carpenter panel.
Yep.
Some other stuff. So stick around for that. What prompted all the wanting to change things was that this episode we wanted to do. We wanted to do a review kind of thing, on share our thoughts on it. But we've been doing a lot of new movies lately. And I'm not saying that we should weed out new movies, right?
We're going to be selective.
Well, that's the thing. This show started as kind of a safe haven for people who were fans of genre film or films that maybe weren't necessarily, you know, received well when they came out or what have you. Cult classics, this sort of thing. And maybe a love for films that aren't actually good.
No, but like bad films.
But they're so bad that they're good, this sort of thing. And that's the kind of thing that we wanted to do when we got going, and we were doing it. And one of my favorite films of all time, as I've said in many episodes, is RoboCop. And we're approaching episode 80, if I'm not mistaken, and we have not done a RoboCop episode yet.
We've not done damn shame.
A single Paul Verhoeven movie that I'm aware of, other than mentioning RoboCop in
did he do 80s Action Week.
He did Showgirls.
Oh, yeah. I'm in for that.
So he also did Starship Troopers. He did L recently, which I loved. He's done some good ones, you know. He did Total Recall. Sorry, so two fucking Paul Verhoevens. In any case, both in 80s Action Week. So we want to go back to being a little bit more, we're not fucking critics.
No,
to be honest, you want a fucking film review, go somewhere else. If you want to geek out on film, have some laughs, and listen to people who've drank way too much fucking coffee, talk for, you know, in long form, have long form conversations, and then get in on it with us, we'd love to have you. And we hope you continue joining us. The other thing is that Devin has not been around much lately, and, that's a big part. That's a big contributor. Why? Because this was another thing. Devin and I have been friends for, you know, since we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
And this show, it was just conversations we were already having. We just put the fucking microphone in front of our faces. So Devin will be back more. East is going to be back more.
All right.
You're going to see Abdullah a lot in the coming months. You're going to see Brent back a little bit. Danny's going to be coming back. So,
which I still haven't done a panel with Danny, to be honest with you. I was only on once. I was on.
You crossed paths once in a hallway.
That was it.
Yeah. And then you were on the American Psycho.
Yeah, but he was on another segment.
So in any case, that's what Movies for My Life is going to be doing in the new year. Also, Nick and I are going to be premiering a comic book show that are going to have various normal people and other people coming in and out randomly, coming in a few months. And we'll talk about that when that does get going. Paula's got her show for parents who are pissed about kids' movies and so forth, and also just want to talk parenting issues, and that's Oh No Kids Movies, and that's premiering next week. So keep an eye on our website, moviesfrommylife.com, to find out how to subscribe to that show, and you can also visit ohnokidsmovies.com, which is the show. There's lots of stuff coming out of Mermal, so we're not going anywhere. We've been getting some emails that said, hey, what's going on? You guys are releasing less episodes. Why? This is why. We're retooling. We're putting new content out, and we're also considering maybe getting into video a little more, maybe not, who knows, because we just like listening to our fucking voices. But so that's what we're doing. We're not going anywhere. That's the point. With that said, my usual spiel, remember, this is just the beginning of the conversation. We want to continue it on with you, and we do. And that's why we're fucking talking format changes right now, because I don't want to have bullshit conversations about movies that I don't really like all that much that I felt the need to review. It is not one of those. I want to talk about it.
I've been talking about it
with anyone who will fucking talk to me this week, and I want to continue that. So reach out to us at Mermal Podcast on Twitter, at MRML Podcast. You can reach me on social media, pretty much like Instagram, Twitter, all the shit. I'm always at Not Branded Fleet. Nick, how can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter. That's my primary one for this show. It's at Gingers_Revenge. Hit me up. In the coming months, when we get close to the release of the new podcast, I will definitely be switching over and doing more off my Twitter. So keep an eye out. You'll be seeing a lot of stuff, a lot of links between my Twitter and the new site.
Yep.
So keep an eye out for it all. I'll try to keep you updated as best I can with shows released, as long as Brandon will do the same.
Yep.
And yeah, just hit me up. If you got a comment, I mean, if you're offended by how I said girls are catty, please. Mm-hmm. I'd love to argue about it, because you know I'm right. You just don't like the way I worded it. So there you go.
All right.
Starting shit already. Let's go.
So If you're not already subscribed to the show, please remember to do so. We're on SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, Google Play Music. We're everywhere that podcasts can be heard. And if we're not where you want to listen to us, let us know and we'll get there.
Except for Spotify.
Yeah. When you do find us on your podcatcher of choice, please click that subscribe button and rate and review the show, because it helps other people find us. And also it does help us kind of gear our content a little bit better if you want to hear more shit that you actually fucking like. I think that's about it.
That's it.
Thanks for hanging out with us. Any like body of water that we're near, it's just like pick up a rock.
Yeah, that's what I do. I always rock, throw it. If I'm by a body of water, I'm throwing something in that water.
Yeah,
and it's usually a rock or a boulder if I can lift it,
or a body.
We don't no, I bury bodies.
That's why I got the Jeep. I got rid of the Alero so you can fit more bodies in the back.
Yeah, but the Alero was perfect because everybody's gonna know a Jeep. Alero had good trunk space.
No, man, I could barely fit that 412 cab in there. Shit was garbage. Anyway.
1-800 cars for kids.
Yeah.